What's up, everyone? Welcome to another episode of this is a bonus episode of the Pokemon Podcast. I'm your host, SBJ. Just another. I'm your host, SBJ. We are here to talk about Legends. We'll give you your full spoiler thing in a second here. But first, I have Greg.
Hi.
And I have Will.
Look, I'm technically at work at the moment.
I mean, so am I. But Greg, you were supposed to make a statement about people completing things.
Was I?
Yes.
I mean, I've seen a bunch of completionists. People have completed a lot of video games.
No. I'm talking about I showed you that I knit something and it's fully finished, ready to be transferred to its new owner.
I don't recall this. I would need a reminder right now, immediately.
Wow.
Show it on screen.
Right here.
Look at that beautiful hat. Congratulations on completing a knit project. You are
Thank
in the 0.1% of knitters.
Now you can open up an Etsy.
From one hat. Yes.
For one hat. One hat Etsy store.
Okay. This is like a... We didn't do a mini series like we did for Diamond Pearl, mostly because we didn't know the structure of the game. I guess if you look at your trainer card for 5 seconds, you realize there's five spots for five different nobles, specifically after you beat Cleavor. So in retrospect, we probably could have done five episodes, but hey, here we are. You got a two-hour episode on Monday. You're getting another episode here.
Well, and I mean, also, if you did like the nobles and the ride Pokemon, which you also have to unlock, we could have done, what? 9, 10?
Yeah, we could really upped it.
16? Yeah, we could have.
So if you're curious about what we're going to talk about this show, we're going to be talking about the battle system. I want to go over that again because I do think it's one of the weaker parts of the game. I want to go over the shiny hunting method, and I want to go over up to all of Area 2, including that noble battle, and then a little bit of Area 3. I know Will has not seen that noble yet, so we can just talk about the beginning area of Noble 3 or Area 3. Because we'll talk about the Basque Legion stuff because it's the water area.
Yeah.
Spoiler, it is the weakest of the five maps.
Well,
I got some words about Area 2, so.
Oh boy. Area 2 is a godsend compared to Area 3.
Okay. I know this is a me problem, and I'm gonna state this. I was running across rocks that had cracks in them. I'm like, oh, I wonder when I'll get Rock Smash to crack those, because that's how my brain thinks Pokemon games work.
I've had that thought. Please tell me it's coming.
As long as you have a Pokemon that knows Rock Smash, you can use it immediately.
I don't think it needs to know Rock Smash. I think you just throw anything.
I threw a bunch of stuff and nothing happened. Mm. I threw one with Rock Smash and it happened. So that is my... Because I would throw stuff against those big, look like they can break rocks, and nothing happened.
I've only seen like three of them. There's like one on the first island.
They're everywhere. The thing is,
we're talking about different
rocks. The lighting is so bad.
Big huge
boulders.
Path blocking.
Yeah,
boulders
cracks
with cracks
in them.
Yeah. I've only seen like three of them. Like one on the first island, and like two on the second. I don't
like
know. Why I'm calling
three
them
in
islands.
The second that I run into
the whole.
I ran into a bunch.
I don't think it needs. I think you just throw any. Because I feel like
I threw
a Glammeot one and it broke it. And I'm going to tell you right now, Glammeot don't got no Rock Smash on her.
I can't say
but
I haven't tried anything.
You are correct in the game tells you nothing in the sense
nothing.
You just see it and you don't really think to like just throw a Pokemon.
Well, I did think, I hope I get that move because I hate these things blocking my way.
The way I've been thinking about it is, oh, there must be a ride Pokemon that... like, we'll charge this to smash it open.
That was my other thought. I didn't sort of put...
I may have been, like, distorted a bit by Monster Hunter stories, where it's like, oh, if you're riding this monster, it has these terrain effects. If you ride this monster, it has these terrain effects. And I'm like, oh, okay, I just need the Pokemon that does that.
Can we, before we... I don't want to start off the show complaining about the battle system, but I do want to complain about it.
I'm not complaining about the battle. I'm just saying, use Rock Smash.
Oh, no. No, I'm just saying that's one of the topics I want to get to. Let's talk about the story real quick. Because you guys always make fun of me for not reading or not caring about the story, which for the most part, there is some truth to that.
There's a lot of truth to that. Not some. There's a lot.
So I
had to sit you down and explain Final Fantasy 14 to you.
I think that at least the way I play video games, and I feel like I know the way I play video games, there has to be a pretty good hook for me to care about the story. Because I've definitely been burned in the past where a game starts off very story heavy and I'm like, this is cool. And then I start playing it. And I was like, I hate the way this game plays. I don't know if I want to, like, I'm mad that I've invested myself in the story and now I have to suffer through the gameplay, right? And that was my worry with Destiny when it came out. And I ignored all the story stuff. I got about 7-8 hours into Destiny. And then I was like, you know what? I do kind of care. And then I went back and Destiny's maybe the worst example because their story is so convoluted and you have to like go to websites and you got to buy books. But I did all that because I genuinely did end up caring about the story. I will say so far in Legends, I'm like, this is fine, right? Like, it's a Pokemon story. I do think the falling out of the sky with a cell phone, I thought that was a great opener. There is a character on the fourth island. And once I met them, now I care.
Yep.
Interesting.
Everything changes wildly.
Yes.
Here's the thing, and I've said this to other people. The story itself is pretty much a paint by numbers anime trope. Like, they don't really stray much from what you would get out of a standard anime. If you really are into world lore and Pokemon lore, this game is rich with story. But if you only care about the main story, it isn't that surprising. They have thrown one major curveball where I was like, I did not expect this to happen. But that's one area so far out of five that I've been to.
Are we talking about the same area, the fourth area, right?
Yeah.
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 Interesting.
The curveball happens there, and it's a somewhat expected curveball if you thought about it a lot, but the story is a paint-by-numbers storyline, but it's the side quests and filling in the world that's really drawn me in. I think they do that really well, but the main plot line's pretty
straightforward. I don't know if it's... The thing I was thinking about, too, is, like, on the second island, which I guess this is a good transition, you meet the, budget Shadow Triad.
I love them.
It's the women,
the sisters,
the three women.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like
Miss Fortune, Chance, and Clover.
Yeah, yeah. I say Shadow Triad because they both throw down the like smoke to disappear.
Yeah, they are anime ninja trope.
I do like the characters are based off other characters, right? Like the farmer guy is based off Gardenia. But also, at the same time, like, I remember the Candace character, because that's, like, a big joke when we do Pokemon Master Polls, yep. Obviously. She's part of the Shadow Triad. She, like, obviously, it's very Candace. I just can't remember their names, because when I look, I'm just like, oh, that's Candace. Like, I don't know who the leader of the Shadow Triad is. I just know that it's based on Bertha/Agatha.
They have names.
I know, but I can't remember. Like, I don't know what the farmer dude's name is. I just know that he's based off Gardenia. And then
Oh, do you mean their names in the game?
Yes.
Even though I literally just said their three names, and Chance, Coin, and Clover. They all three start with C.
Yep.
I don't know if that's like, I think one of the great parts I do like about Pokemon, specifically playing Pokemon Masters, is like, I know who these characters are, right? Like,
well, you'll learn them. You'll learn them in time.
But is Pokemon Masters going to be adding like...
Of course, because Pokemon Masters, otherwise it's just Cheryl's. Cheryl's right. On top of Cheryl's for all eternity. Yeah.
Wait, all the bad part about Pokemon Legends, where is our Cheryl ancestor?
The woman who is the Warren caretaker for Ursaluna is the grass guy from Kalos.
Rammus.
Is that right? Okay.
Oh, is that who she's supposed to be?
Yeah, she's got the same sort of pouty face.
Okay, and she's got that big like leaf over her.
Yeah, she's got the big leaf over her head.
Okay, but there are characters where I'm like, is this a new character or is this based off a character that I don't know of? Because when you get to Baskalegion Island, which is the third area, you have the darker skin guy, and he's in charge of Baskalegion, and there's like this love relationship between. Because I think he's on Diamond Clan, and then the girl who's in charge of the Growlithe, she's on...
Is Pearl.
Pearl Clan, and they have, like, a love relationship, and they're like, oh, this is forbidden love. And because I'm in an interracial relationship,
I watched that, and the amount I was screaming in my own home, because you're like, I pay attention, and they have clearly large clan symbols on their yes. clothing. They have clearly stated the entire storyline through here that they are of two different clans, and you're like, ah, I can't believe they're in, can't date because they're an interracial couple. And I'm like, this is why people get mad at you for not paying attention.
We're in the past. I don't know. I don't know what the rich history is back in the. I can feel for these people.
So going back to what Greg was saying about the environment and the story and the rich history, that so one thing I noticed, which I obviously haven't gotten as far as you guys, is in the Diamond Settlement, inside one of the tents, there's like paintings of a person, mm-hmm. and I'm like, I don't know who this person is.
Ooh, I didn't see any of that. I didn't know you could go in the tents.
Oh, yeah.
You can go into everything. That's the annoying thing about this game is you can go into every building, but they don't tell you. Oh, yeah. There's like the main tent, and it's like, you know, we came here from, and we have like, somebody came and they were accompanied by 10 somethings. And I'm like, who was it that came with 10 somethings? Like, it was like they were accompanied by 10.
Okay, but going back to the Basque Legion guy, is he a new character or is he based off somebody? Because if he's based off Marlin, which is the only water guy I could think of with blue hair, because the guy's like bald, but he has like blue eyebrows. But Marlin's not technically brown. He's white.
He's very tan.
He's whiter. He's whiter, but yes, he's very tan. You can tell because, again, his feet. It's like... The joke for Marlin is he's always in the sun and water, and his feet are not because they're in the water. So I don't know. I can't. Sometimes I can't. Like, I thought that one girl with the leaf and the bee barrel, I thought she was original. But if she's based off Ramos, I mean, I guess that makes sense.
Well, we're sort of like.
I guess it doesn't matter that much.
Splitting
really.
Hairs a little bit. Like, they are all based off of ideas. To make parallels, and that mm-hmm. does seem to be part of the story, especially since the thing that happens makes you believe that there's a lot more happening than these people just sort of were like, hey, we moved to this strange island and it started over again. I mean,
well, if you look at Archie from Omega Ruby, Apple Sapphire, yeah. he's Apple got Sapphire. Darker skin. He's got darker skin, definitely.
But he doesn't have blue hair.
He's got a blue.
He's got a blue hat.
Hat.
It is.
Wait, well, who's Archie's? There's like a big buff guy behind Archie.
Archie's a big buff
Archie's
guy.
Archie's the big buff guy.
There's not.
You're thinking Magma with the skinny guy.
Magma with the skinny guy. No, because they have two. They have two admins. They both have a girl admin and a boy admin. And I thought the boy admin for Archie was like a bigger. Buffer guy, and then the girl admin was like the like very fancy, very pretty girl that everyone likes.
I mean, Archie's the big buff guy for.
I thought he had a bigger buffer guy.
It's possible.
I can't.
Matt.
I
think it's Matt.
Team Aqua.
Yeah, it's Matt.
Admins. Matt is his name. Just Matt.
Yes.
Yeah, he is a bigger buffer guy.
Oh yeah, yeah,
yeah, yeah, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
He doesn't have blue hair though. He has his black hair.
I mean, it is so
Shelly. Shelly is the girl.
I think part of it is they take inspiration from things in the future. So like you can easily look at Iscan as representing
Iscan, that's his name.
Team Aqua. And I think that's sort of like they are all somewhat original characters, but based off of the future world, which kind of ties into the weird lore story that they're telling.
Yeah.
So I think I haven't obviously gotten to the end of the game, so I'll have my wild theories then. But I think they are meant to evoke feelings of I know these characters, but they aren't direct descendants of those characters. Like, I don't know that we can... I think everybody's saying, like, oh, you'll draw a direct line from Leon to Clay, and I don't think that that is a line that we can draw.
Now, it's probably more like parallel universes, and right. This is, like, this right. is this universe's interpretation of that character.
Well, I haven't finished the game either, but I'm
How is that possible? You've played it for like 60 hours.
I have hit the 60-hour mark. I like catching a lot. Like, it is so enjoyable and so much fun to catch. And when you catch a lot, you run out of resources a lot, and then you have to farm, and then farming leads to more catching, and then you get stuck in this way. The gameplay loop is very good. This whole game is incredibly good. I guess story-wise, isn't it something where, like, the Pearl Clan thinks that Palkia is the god, and Diamond Clan thinks Dialga is the god, but neither know that Arceus is god? Is that what they're trying to say?
Well, they think it's Sinnoh. They don't use the word god.
They use Sinnoh. They use Almighty Sinnoh, and the Diamond Clan thinks Sinnoh controls
time,
and the Pearl Clan thinks Sinnoh controls
space. Okay.
They think it's one creature.
Got it. They
have differing interpretations of what that creature controls.
I think they think that they're different. I think there was some text in there that said that they implied that there were different. They think of them as different creatures. But one is the one that created Hisui.
Yeah.
They can't agree on which created Hisui.
And then you're neutral.
Yes.
And Galaxy just doesn't care at all.
Well, Galaxy is, their whole deal is we want to keep the peace, and we're not going to pick either side.
Got
we're not going to get into your religious argument, but we need to make this
a town
area livable.
And just like it's so hard for people who don't think about these things, but just remember, Galaxy are the colonizers from outside. They are new there. The people, the diamonds and the pearls have lived there forever.
For a long time.
Galaxy's been there for about 6 months. And they're trying to take over.
Okay.
So.
I disagree that they're trying to take over.
Sure. So every colonizer would disagree that they were trying to take over. No, I was here for religious freedom. Mm-hmm.
Will made a super great point the last episode. I want to bring it up again because I didn't think we spent a lot of time on it. But the concept of catching Pokemon and then giving them to people is such a strong...
Yeah.
I don't know what to call it. Like, gameplay mechanic. Like, I gave that one dude the Wurmple, right? And that Wurmple's been there the entire time. And I remember when I caught the Wurmple. And then I remember, and then I see other people, and like somebody gave that dude a shiny Wurmple. And that Wurmple will always sit out there and be shiny. And then somebody else gave that dude an alpha Wurmple. And then he just had a big Wurmple sitting next to him. And I gave the one dude in the house, he wanted a Parasect. I gave him a big Parasect. And like, I completely forgot about it. And like 2 days later, I went back in there. And I was like, oh yeah, there's a huge Parasect in this house. It's great. And
I'm curious about the guy, because I think this happens early on. You give him a Wurmple and he wants it to be
a beauty fly.
Mm-hmm.
That's probably the best side mission in the entire game.
Did the Wurmple you get turn into a Silcoon?
I think it turns into a Cascoon for everyone because the dialogue is very specific.
That's what I thought.
Yeah.
That I wasn't sure
because there's part of the mission where it evolves.
Yeah.
When you give him the Wurmple, and it will stay Wurmple forever until you talk to him again. And when you talk to him again, he'll say like, "Oh, it's getting ready to evolve." And then I think you just have to talk to him one more time where it does evolve, and then it evolves into a Cascoon for everyone. And he calls it a Silcoon, even though the Cascoon is saying Cass.
Yeah,
and then. Something happens where, I mean, maybe you talk to him one more time and he goes like, oh, I'm pretty sure this is a Silcoon. There's no way it's not a Silcoon. And then
there's a quest for him in Professor's Blackboard.
Yes.
And that starts that storyline of him thinking that it's a Silcoon.
And then you catch a Silcoon. Ultimately, he wants you to catch a Silcoon. And so you catch a Silcoon and you bring it back and you put both side by side. And he goes, I told you, they're identical. They're exactly the same. It's like really great. And then he accepts that it's a Cascoon, and then he like apologized to it. I don't think that, I don't know, I haven't gotten to the part where, I don't know if it actually evolves though. For me, it's still a Cascoon.
It does. Mine has evolved.
Oh, okay. But whatever that is.
Here's the most important question. What name did you pick?
I think I picked Beautifred.
I picked Beautifred. Beautifred's the best name.
The three names are really great too, though. They're all good.
Yeah, the names are great, but Beat a Friend made me laugh when I saw it and still makes me laugh every time I see it.
But that mechanic of like adding to a town, which I can't think of any other Pokemon game that really has that, but also not only are you catching Pokemon, but you're catching Pokemon with the intent to give to people, but also like it's making those memories. Like I remember catching this Alpha Krogunk and I gave this Alpha Krogunk to this girl and now it's always going to be there. And I think the farm is even better example because you can put your Pokemon to do something. Like the farm has, I think, 3 or 4 Pokemon where they want, like, I want a water Pokemon here, I want a ground Pokemon here, and I want a Pokemon with Rock Smash here. And I can give the farm, like somebody gave their farm an Alpha Torterra, an Alpha Infernape, and an Alpha Empoleon. And so you have these 3 towering Pokemon on their farm. But, like, I was like, oh, I have more than 7 shinies. Or 6 shinies. I can only hold 7 shinies in my party. So I'm going to put my shiny Golem on the farm so he's not living in a PC. So now at least
you're
when I run to
the... never going
to
get it back. But you can see the ones you put into the pasture, too.
Yeah.
Yeah, but when you run to your farm to pick up the stuff, which you should be doing, like, it's cool to be like, oh, what's up?
I haven't even started farming
yet. What's up, Golem? Good to see you. I love it. I love it. I think it's a really great thing.
What it does is it makes the world alive, and it makes you feel like your choices matter.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And that's, like, what is a hallmark of a good game for me currently is I want to feel that the choices that I make have an impact.
And it's something you get so minimally in other Pokemon games.
Right. I can't think of I can only think of like Black and White 2 that did some of that, where what you did carried over and it made Black and White 2 feel more like my continuation of a game.
Mm-hmm. I guess you could argue like Secret Bases in Gen 3 was kind of like that, but somebody had to come and visit.
Yeah, but you had to come. But your Secret Base really didn't alter the fundamental society of the world, right? Like, I couldn't give, like, Flannery a bunch of fire type and then come back and have her use those and say, hey, these have been working out great, or, you know, whatever. Like, that level of interaction and being a part of the world is one of the strongest parts of Legends Arceus and why I am very sold on this game.
Yeah, I would love to see them take it a little bit more advanced where, yes, you can switch out Pokemon with everyone, but also, like, more people request Pokemon, more Pokemon existing, and the Pokemon you give even matter. Like, it would be really cool where the farm specifically, like, hey, if I put more grass-type Pokemon, things grow faster. If I put more water-type Pokemon, things grow slower but bigger or something. I don't know how farming works, but some, like, the choices you put... like affect the, like, hey, this nurse, if you give her a Krogunk, she's better at healing for poison. If you give her a Chansey, she just heals you more or something like that. It would be
backaches.
Yeah, I would like to see that continue. I would like to see like if side quests continue, because they started doing side quests a little in Sun and Moon. But, like, when you fulfilled those side quests, things changed and the things that you did hung around. I would love to see that make its way forward.
Yeah. I think the, like, discussion I hear is, you know, I want the catching mechanic and everything to come back for future games. I want the open worldness to come back for future games. And while I agree, I think Legends is doing a lot of, like, these smaller things, like giving characters Pokemon, which like, that also needs to come back. That adds so much personality and...
Well, it makes the world feel vibrant. It makes the world feel like I'm actually living in a world where Pokemon aren't just fighting machines.
But it's also, it's like the Animal Crossing-ness of it, right? Mm, yeah. I am building my own village.
Yeah.
With, like, these are the parts that it's very limited, but these are the parts that I get to insert, and it's a reflection of me.
Yeah, and I mean, I could even see people playing through the game being like, my playthrough is going to be try to get all these villagers shiny Pokemon or get all these villagers alpha Pokemon. Like, it kind of gives you, like, your own challenge to do if you wanted to play through it again.
I mean, even if future games just had, like, a Pokepelago where I had control of an island and the people there, and I gave them things, and that world changed. Even if it wasn't everywhere in the world, but, like, my own thing, like, I really need to hatch eggs, so I'm going to swap out this Pokemon to make that better. Like, those type of things I would like to see come
Speaking of shiny Pokemon, there is a shiny hunting method in this game.
So mad at you.
So there's a couple things going. I will say, and I've said this on my streams, that the reason we know shiny hunting stuff exists is because of data miners. They have been wrong before in the past. They were wrong with Sword and Shield for the first 2 months. It kept changing. And then, as we discovered recently, they were wrong for pretty much 2 years for Sword and Shield. You know, it took over a month to figure out SOS technically properly. People just kind of do what feels to be right. And if it works, it works. And then maybe we refine that in the future. So just a little side note of, you know, maybe in like 5 episodes, we're going to be like, well, that was wrong. Here's the right way to do it.
Yeah.
But so we know a couple things. We know that if you get a Pokemon Dex research to 10, it's supposed to give you a +1 extra roll. So instead of a 1 in 4,000 chance, it's a 2 in 4,000 chance. And then if you get it to perfect, it gives you, I believe, another +2, which combined with that, that's like a +3. So ultimately getting a Pokemon to perfect in the Dex should give you ideally a 1 in 1,000 chance of finding a perfect or a shiny Pokemon. That's what I have in front of me in my notes. And then there is the shiny charm. So the shiny charm was introduced in one of the greatest Pokemon games ever made. That is called Pokemon Black 2 and Pokemon White 2. And that gave you a +2 roll. Now in Black 2, White 2, the odds were still 1 in 8,000. And then they changed it to 1 in 4,000 in X and Y. And so it's been +2 ever since. Now in this game, the shiny charm is a +3. But it's a little bit more tedious to get. In order to get the shiny charm, not only do you have to catch all 240 Pokemon in the game, not counting the two mythicals.
Can we just give me credit for my guess of 250?
Yes, you get credit.
I was only 10 off.
Yeah, it was like The Price is Right. You didn't go above. You need 240 Pokemon to complete the Dex. In order to get the shiny charm, you need the 240 Pokemon, and you need all of them to be research level 10, which might sound like a lot.
Not that hard.
It's not that hard, because the research level is usually, to get it to 10, it's usually like, catch 3 of the Pokemon. It's like, well, when you find them, there's usually 3 of them right there anyways.
Well, so the thing that I didn't realize at first is, if you look at the Pokedex, the things that have the 2 red up arrows, that line, they count as 2 points towards the research instead of 1.
Mm.
So like a lot of them have catch this line. So if you catch the number, like, you know, like, some of them is 25. That's a 5-line thing, but it's almost always 2 up. So as long as you catch that many, you're going to get the 10. Like, it sounds worse than it is, but if you can pay attention to what on the Dex entry, what the boosted things are, and just do those, you get to 10 real fast.
Yeah.
Perfect. That's another thing.
So ultimately, if you get the shiny charm, which means you have to get research level 10 of everything, you can't get the shiny charm without getting the research level 10. You would have a 1 in 819 chance of finding a shiny. If you just decide, like, you don't care about shinies, but you specifically only want Roselia, so you ignore everything else and you just focus on Roselia, you would have and you get the Roselia to perfect, you would have a 1 in 1,000 chance of that Roselia. Just walking around the overworld. These are, like, standard odds. And then finally, if you perfected your Pokedex, everything is perfect. I believe you do get something. I don't know what that item is. I didn't look it up. But it would be a 1 in 585 chance of a Pokemon to be shiny, which is not as good as Sword and Shield. I believe Sword and Shield was a 1 in 555 or something with the Brilliant, but that was only specifically Brilliant on whatever, whatever that is. Doesn't matter. Or maybe what? None of this matters that much. The method, none of this matters because shinies are 50-50. It's either shiny or it's not.
I am hunting for a shiny Alpha Budu or Roselia, and I thought Alpha Budu was a standard, like it was always going to be there, and I was very wrong.
Mm.
It is not, and my life is terrible.
Can we
I'm
just
sad.
Say that the Alpha Budu...
Oh, he's
it
thick.
Just looks wrong.
Oh, he's a thick. Have you seen Alpha Starly? That's a good one too.
Yeah, Alpha Budu makes me laugh every time I see it. Spit with his little angry eyes coming at me.
The red
like,
eyes.
Yeah, bring it. So, let's be friends.
So the shiny hunting method in this game is called Mass Outbreak. I did a whole 15-minute video on YouTube right now that you can see how it works. I walk you through it. I also walk you through and prove that if you save where I tell you to save, and if you mess it up, if you mess the shiny up, you can still get it back. And then I also proved that if you save where I told you not to save, you have a small chance of losing the shiny. Greg is shaking his head for the audio-only listeners. What is the issue?
Was following your method.
Okay.
I was hunting Pikachu.
Uh-huh.
There wasn't a Pikachu in the batch that was shiny. I reset my game. I went back to the professor. Said, take me back to village because I need a new batch. Mm-hmm. When I went to my mass outbreak, Pikachu was now a Wurmple outbreak.
Yes, that can happen.
You did not say that in your video.
I did.
You liar.
I did.
Oh,
I did.
He whispered
you absolute
it.
Liar.
You said
it will stay there, and it did not. And I got a shiny Wurmple instead of a shiny Pikachu, and this is your fault. You owe me a shiny Pikachu.
There's a little banner that comes up in my video and says it is possible for these to change.
Mister, I don't read things.
I didn't say these things out loud. I did.
False advertising. Right here, right now, go put a
there's a cliff note in the video that says it. So, hey, if it does change, you can just reset and try to re-roll for that Pikachu again. But yes, that's the one, like, not a gripe, but...
I am so mad at you.
You cannot specifically control what you're hunting for, right? Like, if I booted up the game today and was like, I want to hunt for Goomy. I have no way of telling the game that. I just kind of have to keep resetting until Goomy appears.
You don't have to talk to Res.
You don't have to talk to Res technically, but you do because he's going to talk to you when you leave.
Right, he's going to talk to you. But if you're in Jubilife Village and you just go out to the overworld map, it will show you if there's an outbreak without talking.
Yeah, but unless there's something that unlocks, you have to pass.
Yeah, you do have to pass him.
And he will tell you.
He will tell you. Yeah. But I'm just saying, another falsehood in your so-called video.
You can't not.
Is like, you have to talk to Rest.
He's like that hotel, you know, greeter. You got to talk to him every time.
Wait, while we're on the topic of falsehoods coming from Steve, I just want a clarification. Because I think you guys had a little memory mishap. Distortions do not appear until you unlock the second area.
No, then this distortions. This is not true.
I did not get the pop-up that said, hey, this is what a distortion
you
is
get everyone,
until I unlocked the second
everyone
area.
Everyone gets the pop-up on the second area.
Yeah.
I didn't even get to Cleaver, and I got like 7 distortions before Cleaver.
Yeah, you can get them before, but I still think it's tied to your star level.
I had a really high... Yeah, it's really dumb. Because they don't tell you anything about it. Also, somebody called it a giant soap bubble, and I can't stop thinking about that.
Called it a what?
A soap bubble.
Soap bubble.
Well, yeah, it's a dome.
Because it has... Anyways.
I get wrecked in those places all the time, and it's very stressful.
You know, distortions would be great in Pogo. Like, if you could see on the map that there's a distortion happening in a park, and you walk... to that park.
Oh, yeah, that would be cool.
And the park has different spawns because visually on the map there's a distortion. That would be incredible.
Yeah, I'd be in for that.
Yeah, that'd be cool.
Especially for community days to make it more interesting.
Anyway, Steve is a liar.
Anyways,
moving on.
So if you want to see how to shiny hunt, that is up on my YouTube.
Put giant asterisks in the comments.
I thought of it all. I don't know.
You did.
I spent so long on that video.
And you left out vital information. I'm mad.
Here's the thing about the mass outbreak odds, though, that I want to talk about. So a base raid mass outbreak. So this is like you can do mass outbreak, you know, right before Cleaver if you wanted to. If it pops up, you can do it. I believe you just have to be 2 stars in order to get a mass outbreak to appear. I show you how to reset for a mass outbreak if you want to just start hunting. The odds of that is 1 in 158. And then we'll just skip everything in the middle. If you have a perfect Pokedex plus the shiny charm, your odds for a shiny in a mass outbreak would be 1 in 128. Now, I've seen the discussions of this game is the easiest Pokemon game to shiny hunt in. But I've also been around on the internet where people have said that for literally every Pokemon game that has come out. When X and Y came out, people were like, oh my gosh, chain fishing is so broken and Chinese are so easy and they yes, chain fishing is I think it's 1 in 100. It's either 102 or something like that.
For things that can be caught by fishing.
Correct. So even though, like, yes, chain fishing is 1 in 100, there's only like 20 Pokemon that you can chain fish for. So this conversation of, oh my gosh, either, and it's whatever. It's like, Chinese are devalued. Chinese are too easy. They're just handing out Chinese. The conversation that's happening around Legends with mass outbreaks is the same conversation we had for X and Y. Now, to bring up everyone's memory, it's the same conversation we had for Ultra Sun, Ultra Moon in the Ultra Wormholes. Oh my gosh, they made Chinese so easy. Okay, once again, there's only 20 Chinese in the Ultra Wormhole.
Yeah, but they really made Chinese easy in Dynamax Adventures.
You know, in Dynamax Adventures, it's a 1 in 100 chance. Yes, that is correct. Assuming you have Shiny Charm for that.
They ruin Shinies with Pogo.
So here's the thing about mass outbreaks. You cannot control it. It's like it's like Dynamax Adventure. It's like the Ultra Wormhole. It's like, chain fishing you can kind of control. Chain fishing you can control the three. But like a lot of the chain fishing stuff was like 60%, 35%. 5%. So if you're going for the 5%, you're probably going to get like 18 shiny horsies before you get that 5%. You can't specifically control the mass outbreak. Yes, you can keep resetting until you get the one you want. But again, you know, if I boot up my game today and I want Goomy, I might see Krikatot, Krikatoon, Bee-Barrel, Golduck, whatever else before I get the Goomy one. The 1 in 158. Is a great odds. I mean, I'm up to like 12, 13 Chinese in the game after 5 days. Most of them are, I think 3 of them are just random, but most of them are mass outbreak. But some mass outbreaks are awful. They suck. Like
Pikachu was not fun.
Yeah, Pikachu. I did Pikachu. It was not fun. I was very lucky. Pikachu was my first 4, but the other 3 Pikachu were very upset that I was there. Surprisingly, Silcoon is like, I don't know why you would ever do Silcoon. Just do Wurmple 3. Like, just do Wurmple. I guess maybe you could be Go and your Silcoon or your Wurmple could evolve into 3 Cascoons, but like the Silcoon outbreak, awful. I think the worst outbreak I've done is Psyduck. For whatever reason.
Oh, I did a Psyduck one. Yeah, it was bad.
You cannot throw. This is why the third area in the game is bad, because it's a water area. If your Pokeball hits the water, you have to hit the Pokemon in like like 10% of its head that is showing up. So since the Psyduck outbreak in the second area is in the swamp and they're all 4 in the water, it's really hard to hit them, and you have to like bring them out of the water with berries.
The targeting doesn't help with that.
The auto targeting seems to go for their body always.
But it goes for their body. So you have to tilt, you have to target it and tilt it up to hit them in the head. Otherwise,
forget it.
And it's frustrating. They get the Psyduck get mad.
They get mad.
And when you finally catch, like, so how a mass break also works is like there's usually like 12 in a group. So you catch one, another one pops up. So ideally, you catch 4, then 4 more pop up, and then you do that one more time. With Psyduck, you'll have to like fish them out of the water with berries and then catch them. And then the new ones spawn in the water again, and you have to do the same thing over. And good luck making sure none of them get mad, because once they get mad, you're just like, oh, God.
I was doing a side deck because I just wanted to complete the Pokedex. And at the near the end, when they were all mad at me, the one that spawned was an alpha who was also very mad at me.
I don't think they're handing out shinies. I don't think that like shiny hunting is ruined. I do think the shiny hunting method is fun. I do think it's easy. I don't know if it's as easy as something as like SOS, because SOS was 1 in 252 for odds.
SOS was, you could set that up like a machine. It was like a set it and forget it type thing.
Yeah, and SOS I think is really easy to explain to somebody. It is pick a Pokemon. Wait for it to call in, keep knocking out, switch if you need to. Like, you can get really advanced with SOS, and you could be like, well, false swipe, Blepaberry, harvest, switch. Like, you can get very advanced with it. But for, like Irene, she SOS successfully 4 or 5 Pokemon, and she didn't know any of those tricks. It was just like, false swipe the first one, knock out the next one, look at your watch, maybe after 30 minutes, you know, switch the two around. And she got a Stuffle, she got a Rock Ruff, she got a bunch. Like, it was very easy to do. And I think, for the most part, Let's Go Pikachu, Let's Go Eevee was pretty easy for a lot of people to do. I think Mass Outbreaks is a little more complicated depending on the hunt. Like, example, Psyduck sucks. Silcoon sucks. Like, there are some Pokemon where if you catch one, no matter what, they're all getting angry, and you gotta deal with that.
They have to deal with it. I mean, to be fair, if you can time it right, you can throw a high-level Pokemon in the middle of them, and then as they're all focused on your Pokemon, pick them off one by one. Which is what I was doing for Pikachu before a YouTuber lied to me and my Pikachus went away.
Not lie to you. Hey, I don't think that they do. Well, the game does give you a free shiny. It gives you a free shiny Ponyta, which is cool. It's whatever. It's nice.
Yeah. I mean, I'm hunting a shiny alpha, so my life is over.
I think they're still trying to find that balance of like what is too generous for shinies and what is not generous enough. But also, I think at the end of the day, it doesn't matter because somebody who is into shiny hunting is going to min-max the system, right? Like, what is the most efficient way that I can get the most number of shinies ever?
Yeah, definitely.
And if you're just a person who is playing through the game, which is probably the majority of Pokemon fans, it is nice for those people to get maybe one or two while playing through the game and not putting a lot of effort in. For as many people coming into my Twitch streams being like, I'm up to 5, I'm up to 6, I'm up to 7 shinies, there is an equal amount of people that are like, I've played this game for 40 hours, I haven't seen one. What am I doing wrong? And it's, you know, you're not doing anything wrong. It's just luck, and the people who are saying they're getting 5, 6, 7, they're trying to find them.
Yeah. And I will say I'm very torn between trying to find them and finish the game because I get real sick of doing that grind real fast.
If you don't want to burn yourself out, this is what I've been doing because I've also felt like I just want to finish the story, but also like an outbreak is appearing. If you don't want to burn yourself out, this is what I suggest. If you see an outbreak, prioritize it. Just do it. Don't worry about resetting. If you get a shiny, great. If not, you've only spent like 5 or 6 minutes, and you've probably got that to level 10.
Yeah.
And you need
outbreaks
to do that anyways.
Outbreaks are great for completing the Pokedex. Because if you catch all of them, generally you're going to get a complete on that Dex entry, which only serves you good. It's only a good thing.
Speaking of bad things, the battle system is bad. And we talked about it a little bit last week.
What do you mean by battle system? Like trainer battles or just battling Pokemon in general?
Both, because they're like the same.
Okay.
I strongly feel that they were too timid in the implementation of this battle system. I feel like as a company, they're like, we really want to try something new, but if we make it super complicated, it will turn people off. So they went too far in the other way, and It's not great. It's just like there.
I mean, I
use it, but I'm never like, wee.
I think it's bad for a lot of reasons, and I said this last week, and I'll say this, you know, going forward, I always will applaud this company for trying something new. And when they do something new and it works, man, it is a home run. And when they do something new and it doesn't work, You just can't help but think, like, you did this well before. How did you drop the ball? This game wants the battle system to be easy enough for, I think, any new Pokemon fan to jump in. But yeah. I think they fumble the ball so hard and actually make it more complicated than it needs to be. Like when you first... This is the first Pokemon game where... They're like, here's a whole type chart at the beginning, and you can pull it up in your menu at any time.
Yeah.
Like, every other Pokemon game is, here's a trainer school, and in the trainer school, we're going to teach you about fire, water, and grass. And you're like, okay, paper, rock, paper, scissors, this makes sense. This game doesn't do that. Here's 18,000 different types. And this, like, no one's looking at this chart. When I say no one, I mean no one who is this is their first or maybe even second Pokemon game wants to stare at that chart. I've been playing the series for 25 years. I don't want to stare at that chart. Like, I just don't. It's. Yeah, and I remember playing Temtem for the first time 2 years ago when it was in beta or alpha. Temtem is like that, you know, wannabe Pokemon. Yeah. It's a Pokemon clone. And they have, I think, 15 types in that game. And they do the same thing in Temtem. When you start up the game, they're like, here's the type chart. And you're like, I don't know what oil type or technology type is, but apparently they don't interact. I guess maybe if I like this game, I'll eventually memorize it. They do the thing of Let's Go Pikachu, Let's Go Eevee, which initially I thought this game was going to be no held items, no abilities. Fine. There's so many Pokemon players who go through the game without ever equipping a held item. Totally acceptable. There are so many players. Like, look, I don't think I actually understood what Mold Breaker did until like Gen 6.
Breaks the mold.
Breaks the mold.
Yeah, it breaks the mold.
And I would wager to bet anyone who is not super into competitive probably doesn't catch a Pokemon with the intent of like, this ability is good. Like, they're just like, I like Furfru. I want this dog Pokemon on my team. What, like, most people probably don't even know what Furfru's ability was unless they played Ultra Sun.
Storyline players, yes.
Yeah. Right. I think certain ones they look for. Like, I think every, even casual players, when they have a pickup one time, well, they're like, I need a Pokemon with pickup. Like, there's just certain useful game abilities that they do care about, but competitive specific or battle specific abilities, I would agree that they really don't look for. But overworld useful things, I do think people look for.
Sure. Like, the only one I could really think of that somebody might stick with would be like Mimikyu. Because yeah. Mimikyu's ability is very obvious. And like
Ice Cune too.
An ability like Torrent of like a Piplup or a Feraligatr or something. I would assume that people would just not know that, hey, if your health is below 30%, your water type move is going to do more damage. Again, my problem with the battle system isn't the lack of abilities and isn't the lack of held items. I think that's fine to remove those to get people to ease into the game. And there's not even Eevees in this game. IVs. There's just Eevees. And yeah, they're doing the Eevees kind of similar to Let's Go Pikachu, Let's Go Eevee, although maybe a little bit better, where every stat has a stat of 10. And the alpha Pokemon already have EVs set. That's why they're so much stronger. And when you catch like 50 Ponyta and you release those 50 Ponyta, you get that grit, I think it's called. And you give that grit to increase it. So if you're playing through Legends and you're like, man, why is my level 25 Wurmple losing to a level 5 Banary? It's probably because you didn't give it any of that grit, and some of those wild Pokemon have that applied already. And I think that is fine. Again, not my specific problem with the game, although they don't really make that super clear of like why you would want to do that.
Mm-mm. Yeah, now you've educated me right now.
Yeah, they don't make it clear at all. They really don't talk about it. They just say, here's grit.
No, okay. They talk about the grit. They talk about what it does, but they don't say, hey, your Pokemon's not going to be any good unless you give it some of the grit. There's a whole thing about, because Leon interrupts you in the town, and he's like, there's stones all over, and stones do different things, and stones are important, and here's some grit.
Yeah.
But also, I think that the problem is I think the problem with the battle system is, again, not the lack of abilities, not the lack of held items, not the lack of IVs, not the fact that they simplified. I actually think simplifying the EVs is probably good. As a competitive player, I understand, like, hey, Incineroar needs, like, 68 in special defense and, like, 110 in speed, but also the meta has changed, so now we're going to bump down Incineroar to 80. Like, I get it. Like, I'm very into that scene, right? Like, I hated competitive battling until I understood it. And I get it. I also understand that the wall to get into competitive battling is very high. And I also understand that this game is not a competitive game. I think the thing that drives me crazy with the battle system is for somebody who has fully understood the mechanics of Pokemon. This battle system is incredibly frustrating on what is doing what and why stuff is happening. So like last week we talked about how you can't Swords Dance twice. You can only Swords Dance once. And there are no priority moves. So a move like Aqua Jet should be priority, but it doesn't. It's not priority, but what happens is when you use a move that is supposed to be priority, it then gives you priority for the next turn, which is nowhere explained. And the you have to hit the Y button to drop down this menu, and the menu is showing who's going first for whatever reason. So it'll be like Weasel, Parasect, Weasel, Parasect, Weasel, Parasect. And there are instances where it'll be like, okay, I'm going first, then they're going, then I'm going. And sometimes they'll just go twice.
Well, that's kind of explained, is if it's if their speed is higher than yours, they go first. And if it's like significantly higher than yours, they may get two attacks. Yeah. They literally say that at the beginning.
But you have no way in battle of figuring that out. So you can't make...
Well, no, because it's the magic of being in a world where you don't have all the answers. It's not spreadsheet wars.
Well, I mean...
It's living in a Pokemon world.
I mean, you can see if they have it because you can bring up the turn order.
True.
But I'm saying sometimes the turn order is like me, you, me, you, me, you, and they're not using Agile style, and they're sometimes taking two turns.
So it's like me, me, you.
But yes. It's like the Aqua Jet thing, right? Like, nowhere does Aqua Jet tell you that your next time is going to be boosted. You just do it, and then the next time you have a slight boost because you use that move.
I mean, one thing I would like changed is I would like, because what's happening, and I know what you're talking about, is when they do something that gives them an extra turn, you can't look at the turn order again until it's your turn.
Yes.
It is not visible.
Yes, correct.
So without it being there, it makes it feel confusing about what just happened. And since you passed that moment in the turn order, you don't get to see it. I would like to be able to see the turn order outside of my menu so that I can see what's happening to make more sense of what just happened in this battle. They don't do that. So it does sometimes feel like, what just happened? Why did they get two? Because when I looked at the turn order, that wasn't going to happen.
I purposely got in a fight with three Zubats, and you can hit the LR or whatever to pick which Zubat, and then if you look at the turn order, it'll say you, I'll say Buizel, and it'll say Zubat, 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 Buizel, which Zubat? I don't know which one is going first. So you can be in a situation where it's you, Zubat, you, Zubat, 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 and you're like, well, if I knock out the one Zubat that's supposed to go next, I get to go again. So I was like, I see the strategy. I see what they're trying to do. But when I'm selecting, I don't know which of the three Zubats is the one Zubat that is supposed to go first.
So the only thing I have found in that is the one that you have highlighted, like the one that you have targeted, their panel turns red. So you get the blue, and then the one that you have targeted is red, and then the other two are blank. They'll be the blank background. And if you change the targeting, you should be able to see, oh, I'm now targeting this one, and then their line should turn red in the turn order. It's not particularly intuitive.
Mm.
But you should be able to switch the targets and see by which gets the red background, which is in what order.
Mm.
It's not great.
It's not great.
It's not great. And I generally just am like, whatever, I don't care.
And I don't think the Agile strong style is also a problem. When I first saw it, I thought of Bravely Default, and I'm going to use a Bravely Default. For those that haven't played Bravely Default, I'm going to explain that game a little bit, because I think that this game, if they just copied Bravely Default one-to-one, it would have been incredible. It seems like they copied somebody's homework, but they like missed question one, so then they like wrote like they wrote the wrong answer for the next like 10.
They couldn't. It's that thing where you can't copy it directly, so you try to paraphrase it in your own way, and you make it worse.
So in Bravely Default, the game is called Bravely Default because you have two options: you can brave or you can default during a battle. If you decide to brave, you can brave anywhere up to 1 to 4 times. So what you can do is you can attack 4 times in a row, which is brave, 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 and now you're attacking 4 times in a row. But what that means is your opponent, if they survive, you have to wait now 4 turns because you opted to use all your 4 turns up front and they get 4 turns. Sound familiar? This is exactly like the Brave and Agile system. So you can also default. So if you choose to default, you can default 1 to 4 times. So you can say default. Now you have reserved yourself 2 turns. So if the next turn you want to brave 1, 2, 3, 4 times, you're -2 +4. So now you're only losing 2 turns because you defaulted twice, but then braved 4. And when you do brave, you're actually like in a defense mode. So you can still take damage. You just don't take as much because you're like defaulting.
You mean default.
Pausing
default
your turn.
Mode.
And it's really great. And you, why it's so great is because when you're grinding creatures in Bravely Default, you go, well, there's only 2 creatures in front of me. I'm going to brave, 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 brave. I'm going to just brave and 2 hits, knock that out. 2 hits, knock that out. Battle over. But in a boss battle, or maybe in this game, an alpha battle, you might not want to brave 4 times because that might not be enough to knock out like the alpha Ursa Ring. And now you're giving alpha Ursa Ring 4 turns in a row to knock you out. They could have just done that. And they didn't. They didn't have to do like +4, -4, all right. That stuff. But it's so close to that, but not nearly as good and not nearly as fun.
I mean, I do think there are hidden benefits to it. They just don't seem to matter enough to make the system
That's
interesting.
Pretty much what I was going to say. It's, to me, it's very similar to held items and abilities. I will probably never do an agile or a strong. I'm just not putting that much effort into figuring out how that's going to work.
But if you're in a battle with if you're in a battle with an Ursa Ring, right, and you use a fighting type move, and the move does like 40%, you would know that the next turn, if you just use the same move and then applied strong style with it, it will probably finish it.
Sure, if I was overthinking things or actually planning through, I just keep pressing buttons until something happens.
And then the other thing with the battle system, and again, I'm going to tie this back to Bravely Default because it just does it so much better, is, and I don't need Pokemon to be Bravely Default, but like, you introduce a system in this game where you're walking around in the world and you can get into a battle with like 2 Psyduck and... Here, I'll give you a better example. I was running to another area of the map, and a shiny Drifloon popped up out of nowhere. Awesome. I went to go interact with that shiny Drifloon, and while I started that battle with the shiny Drifloon, a Staravia decided to join, and like a Skorupi decided to join. So the game puts you in a situation where it's 1 versus 3, and the battle system doesn't really give you anything to work with in that situation. Because I talked about that turn order before. So what you can do is you can just choose to ignore everything and keep throwing Pokeballs at the Drifloon, or you can try to knock out the Skorupi and then the Staravia and then keep throwing Pokeballs. But there's nothing like Surf or Rock Slide or
there's no spread
discharge.
Attacks. Yeah,
they
no
opted
attacks.
To get rid of all the spread attacks, but they didn't opt to get rid of multiple battles. I have no problem with multiple battles. They're just not interesting in any way. And they've done multiple battles before. In Sun and Moon, all of the totem battles are 2 versus 1.
Well, but we can blame this on the legions of people, I won't name names, but they probably live in Scotland, who complained of like, well, how come when I use Earthquake, it doesn't hit me if it's hitting everything else around here? And now their Pokemon company's like, oh, well, we can't do these spread moves because clearly the player is on the field. So if they Earthquake, it's going to hurt the player himself.
Oh, that
herself.
Still happens. That still happens.
And so they got rid of spread moves for whatever reason, but they have, hey, 5 Pokemon can join this battle. But they've done this before. So like, you have totem Pokemon in Sun and Moon and Ultra Sun and Moon, where it's 1v2. And then in X and Y and Omega Ruby, you have 5 Pokemon in front of you.
But they've also made the change that you can throw Pokeballs when there are multiple Pokemon. Yeah,
and that's a good
you,
change.
Which you could
for sure.
not do in those games.
There, but I just wish if 5 people joined the party, I should be able to throw out my other Pokemon and be like, let's do this. My whole squad's here.
Okay. So now I'm going to tie.
I agree.
Now I'm going to tie this back to Bravely Default. So in Bravely Default, if you're walking around the overworld, and in Bravely Default, you can see the creatures around the overworld, because Pokemon was one of the last JRPGs in the entire world to have creatures walking around the overworld. You can kite. You can get creatures to follow you into other creatures. So if I'm in Bravely Default and I see a Scorpion, it probably has a name because it's some monster. I'll just call it. And you, Scorpion's now following you. I'm going to follow in. I'm going to walk this Scorpion to another Scorpion. I'm going to walk this Scorpion to another Scorpion. And now instead of battling one Scorpion, I'm battling 3 Scorpions. And what Bravely Default does is you made the choice to battle 3 instead of 1. We're going to give you more experience. We're going to give you more rewards. You've made it harder for yourself. Good luck. And I think Pokemon trainers want that. They want a game where, like, if I make choices and I want to make it difficult, I did that. And in this game, I can get 3 Zubats to fight me. I get zero benefit from those 3 Zubats. There's no reason there besides the, I guess, the challenge. It's not challenging. It's not challenging to fight the 3 Zubats. It's just annoying.
You can catch 3 Zubats, right? Catch.
Yeah, you can catch. Yeah, I mean, you get experience for the 3, but it's not boosted.
The only real answer, and what I do in these situations, like, let's say I roll up on a Geodude and a nosy Zubat flies in and he's like, I want in on this too. I say, get out of here, you nosy Zubat. And I mean, that's as much as I do.
Yeah. The
like, I still don't understand why they got rid of, like, Discharge or, like, Surf. Like, in the sense, you can stand behind the Zubat and Rock Throw, and you will get hit by the Rock Throw. Yeah. So, I think it would be more interesting where your Pokemon can only hold 4 moves. So, if you want to hold Earthquake, but you also want to hold Mudslap, because Mudslap, they're both ground-type moves. Mudslap hits 1, Earthquake hits everything. Then you're making more... I don't even think it's complex, but you're saying, like, I want these 2 moves because of these 2 situations, and let it have it where hey, Earthquake does hit everything. It doesn't do as much damage as maybe a single target move, but also if you're using a move like Earthquake or you're using a move like Discharge, your trainer has to actually stand farther back. You have to move your trainer. The trainer moving around in the world is like a very nice gimmick, but that's all it is. It's just a gimmick. Once you, like, move around after the first, like, 5 battles, you're like, cool.
Well, it makes me feel like I'm in the world.
Yeah, it's a nice gimmick. I enjoy it. But again, I think they stepped too far back from what the system could be out of safety and, like, we don't want to push this too far. And I think for people who are very experienced with Pokemon games, we feel that how far we are away from where we were very strongly.
Yeah.
Because it's gorgeous to be able to toss my Pokemon out, run off to the side and have them fight. And that's so fluid. But then I feel like...
And the animations look great.
I want all my things. I want to be able to hit these 4 Pikachu with 1 move. I want to be able to do all the things that I could do in my other games here. And I'm stopped for not a great reason. Like, it's not clear why they did it this way. And so it feels like, oh.
Well, no, I'd say that, like, for all of these types of things, they probably had to do an evaluation of a spectrum of realism of I am in the world, which we haven't had before, because there's always been, like, there's this weird barrier between me and my Pokemon, versus how the moves work and operate based on tradition of how they move and operate. And, you know, for you guys, you feel like they went too far on the realism side rather than having to explain, oh, when your Pokemon uses Earthquake, there's, like, a cone behind or something like that, which they could have done. But then once again, that's that much more complexity for a new style of game that people have to learn.
I do think experienced people find the battle system, find the parts that are missing from the battle system more readily. I do feel it when I'm like, I want to be able to use Discharge and it's just not available. I don't want to have to fight all these Zubats singly. I don't have these options. Whereas a new player probably does not have that concern at all.
Yeah. I think, though, and some of the pushback is like, well, it's not a competitive game. I get that. But, like, Sword and Shield doesn't slam in your face that it's a competitive game, right? But Sword and Shield lowered the barriers to entry so much for competitive people that you have to start somewhere. I, as a Pokemon fan, always came to Pokemon from, like, Red and Blue, Gold and Silver, Diamond and Pearl. Like, the battling is what brought me to Pokemon. And I didn't switch that. And then Black and White is like, I want to try to take this seriously. I just don't understand it enough. And people helped me build teams. And I went, that's where Will and I met. We met at, like, a tournament. And then that the competitive battling in the video game got me into competitive battling in the TCG. And then in X and Y, I slowly stopped caring about the battling because it was kind of so much the same. And I then got more into, like, the catching. And then Sun and Moon was like, I want to complete my Pokedex. So I definitely, like, changed as a trainer where, like, the battle system in the original Pokemon games, me being, like, a 10-year-old, a 12-year-old, seeing Ash battle, like, I wanted to be, like, the world's greatest trainer, right? Mm-hmm. And then very quickly realized there's way many people out there that are better than battling than I am. And now, as a trainer, I like the collection aspect. And then because Sword and Shield was so good with the battling, I got back into battling to a point where, like, I understand EVs, I understand IVs, I understand turn order, I understand how to, like, build a team to, like, have synergy with each other. And so it's hard for me to be like, well, Legends is the best Pokemon game ever. I don't think it is. I think it's an incredibly good Pokemon game. I think it's incredibly fun. I think it's worth the $60. Even with the battle system being bad, I still think 100% every Pokemon fan should go out and buy this game, except if the main reason you like Pokemon games is battling. And that's why I'm being so hard in the battle sense, because I cannot say this is the best Pokemon game ever, because if your favorite part of Pokemon is battling, this game does not do it. It just doesn't.
I hope that they keep this sort of fluid into battle in the overworld going forward, but with the battle advancements that we're used to in, like, Sword and Shield. Yeah. Like, I want to be able to move in and out of battles as freely in future games as I can in Arceus, but I want more of the spread moves and the things that I'm used to in battling in future games. I kind of want, like, I really like the fact that it's so smooth to jump into battle. I just toss it and it poof. It's like what would happen in the real world. And it feels great. I just want my rich pool of moves back.
So, like, for Pokemon Legends Victini, they can just, like, make it slightly more complex, because it's like, all right, everybody learned Arceus, the basics. Now we're going to just dial up the complexity a little bit more.
I think it's close. The ease of getting into battle, the ease of leaving battle, the weirdness of, like, taking a move like Surf. I don't even know if Surf is in the game. But, like, only single, like, if they did the Bravely Default thing of, hey, you can choose to battle one Geodude at a time, but if you want to get three Geodudes in here, we're going to give you more experience, more rewards, we're going to make it harder for you, you got to think about the move choices a little bit better, maybe you'll bring different Pokemon. Like, they're really close to what other JRPGs are doing. Persona 5 is another great example. There is a balance between battling six Zubats and battling an alpha and battling a boss. And I wouldn't really consider alphas bosses. But again, I think of games like Persona 5. I think of games like Bravely Default, where there are strong creatures in the overworld that are not bosses. And you do need a good, like, there is nothing interesting and this goes back to why I think Let's Go Pikachu, Let's Go Eevee is a great game. They added more trainers in Let's Go Eevee, Let's Go Pikachu versus Pokemon Yellow, right? So you go into Viridian Forest, there's a bunch of trainers. You go your way to Celadon, there's a bunch of trainers. There's more trainers than there were in the past game. But you're not battling Pikachus, you're not battling Weedles, you're not battling Caterpies, you're just catching them. And I think Let's Go Pikachu, Let's Go Eevee has a great balance of like, hey, if you want a trainer battle, it's there. If you want a wild Pokemon battle, it's there. And I do get pushback of like, I miss battling wild Pokemon. Why? What do you miss about it? Do you miss one-shotting Pikachus over and over and over again? Because
Wait, I get to battle Pokemon. What's...
I don't think inherently there is anything interesting about battling wild Pokemon. If I want to battle, I want to battle a trainer who normally has two or three Pokemon, who normally has a strategy. Even on early routes, like a really good example of this is in Sun and Moon. When you make it right outside the first trial of Sun and Moon, there's like a really rich trainer. And I can't remember what she's using. She might be using like a Miltank or something pretty basic. Doesn't matter what she's using. But most people cannot one-shot her. And so you get her down to like 1 HP, and then she just uses a max potion. And then you're like, what? And then you like get her down to 1 HP again, and she uses a max potion. And this girl has like unlimited max potions because her like username is like Rich Beauty 524. Like all of the trainers in most Pokemon games have a strategy. The difference is you probably knock them out before they even use the strategy. And it's the same for gym leaders too. Like they all have a strategy. Like if you let what's that dude's name? Not Iris, the eighth gym leader in Black and White. The Dryden?
Well, it's either Dryden or Iris, depending on your version of the game.
Like if you let him set up, he's setting up and he's probably gonna beat you. Like he has a specific strategy, and if you don't stop it, you will be stopped by him.
If you don't stop it, he will stop you.
But wild Pokemon don't have that strategy, right? Like, and I think that's why the alpha Pokemon stand out to me as like fun, why non-trainer battles is because they are super strong. And before you encounter them, you have to think like, okay, do I want to knock this out? Do I want to catch it? I remember the first time I attacked that Parasect. I was level 25, was my strongest Pokemon, and my other Pokemon were like 22, 23, and the Parasect was 40. 15 levels above. And I was like, I'm going to go in. I'm going to hope that I hit it with a Thunder Wave. It's going to one-shot me. I am going to send out another Pokemon. I'm going to hope I hit it with Hypnosis. And now I know in like 3 or 4 turns that status condition is going to clear because that's how status conditions work in this game. So I'm on a time limit to catch this, but I'm also on a time limit that it's going to one-shot everything. That is great. And that's what these other JRPGs have been doing for years, like Persona 5, Bravely Default, etc. The other battles, again, in Persona 5, in Bravely Default, yeah, they exist, but they exist in like a millisecond because you're just knocking them out right away and you're moving on. And they have the speed up features and they have like the brave feature where it's like these battles are so useless and they're just filler, and they're just for you to get experience. And Pokemon has an alternative to that now. And the alternative was in Let's Go Pikachu, Let's Go Eevee. It's just called catching them and moving on. We don't need to battle 800 Pikachus. We already know that we're just going to bulldoze it over and over again. So instead of going through we started the battle. I got to select bulldoze. I got to watch you faint. I got to move on. Let me just catch. Like, I don't need to battle garbage wild Pokemon. But I would like to battle alphas, and I would like to battle trainers.
You can just catch.
Right. Pokemon. That's what I'm saying.
You don't have to battle them. I enjoy the battles. I like seeing the animations.
There are valid reasons for people who like battling wild Pokemon for them liking it. And like, it doesn't hurt me to have them there. So like, I could be over it. Like, I am over grinding on mobs in most games, but a lot of people enjoy seeing, like, that gives them a sense of wonder of the world. You run into these things, they attack, they have certain moves that are standard that like, kind of gives you interest about what they are. Like, there are reasons to do it, and whether or not you find them compelling or not is entirely on you.
I think what I'm saying is if your reasoning because you want to battle wild Pokemon is because you like to battle, then the solution the game should give you is battles that mean something, and that's usually normally a trainer battle versus just a random battle in Viridian Forest. And that's
that's what you like.
That's why I'm saying Let's Go Pikachu, Let's Go Eevee did that good well, because they increased the amount of trainers because they knew that there were not any wild battles.
Right. But there are also people who found the game lacking because there weren't wild Pokemon battles.
Yeah, and but I just think those people are wrong. Like,
yeah, I mean, you could think that they're wrong because it doesn't appeal to you, but it appeals to them. There is something about that interaction that they enjoy. There is something about the interaction of people doing hunts in Final Fantasy XIV that is completely lost on me. I don't know why you want to do those. I don't know why people do them, but they're there and they do it. It's not for me to say, hey, this is dumb, you should remove it from the game, because clearly there's a lot of people that like it. I just think that Pokemon in particular could be better at ways to avoid those other than you have to spend money on super repels. And one of the ways of doing that is having things in the overworld that you can dodge.
Yeah. And if there's three of them, you should be able to hit all three or be rewarded for whatever.
Yes. Yes.
Like I said, I don't think the battle system doesn't
detour the game.
Something's getting detoured.
It doesn't take away from the enjoyment of the game. It takes it. Okay. It lowers the score. Like, I give the game a solid B+. Like, it's not an A+ game because of these things that I find missing. But it is a B+ experience for me, and that is a rare game these days.
Yeah, I think I do think the core things that make a Pokemon game a Pokemon game really come down to catching and collecting Pokemon and battling Pokemon. Like, I don't think 8 gyms makes a Pokemon game. I don't think, as much as I like ribbons and marks, I don't think ribbons and marks make a Pokemon game. As much as I
don't,
as much as some people like breeding, I don't think breeding needs to be in a Pokemon game. Although I would argue that it is a very important part of Pokemon.
I miss it so hard in this game. I want it so bad.
I don't think abilities and held items need to be in a Pokemon game. I don't think growing berries need to be in a Pokemon game. But I do think that catching and collecting needs to be in a Pokemon game, and I do think battling needs to be in a Pokemon game, and the battling in this game is very weak.
Yeah. I agree that it is a weaker point of the game.
Very intro level.
But the second area is the best area because it has Budu in it, so I will hear nothing more.
No. Wrong.
Nothing
because
more.
Because one thing that you said on Sunday, which you shouldn't have because it was talking about the second area when we were supposed to only be talking about up to Kleavor, was they've put me in this area with all of these high ridges that I can't get around. I can't. Uh-huh. Dag nabbit, I hate that. I cannot get anywhere in that area. I'm so tired of it.
And it's very, very brown. And
it is very brown.
I don't care about the brown. I don't care. It's just like, it's just so annoying that they.
Don't worry. I've played enough of this game to know how weird your glitches through cliffs at this point. Where it's like, if I hit the cliff at this angle, at this speed, he will go up it.
I don't know if that's a glitch, because one of the first errors I saw in the game was a Stantler standing in midair because it had decided to jump away from me, but then turn around.
I've seen that too. Well, it is the Looney Tunes philosophy of gravity. As long as Stantler doesn't
and
look down,
have anti-grav powers. That's all.
Well, they have psychic abilities, so
this is probably getting a little ahead. But I think the Pokédex is 240.
Very long.
This is probably the last point I will say. The Pokédex is 240. When I got to the second area, I was so excited, and there are new Pokémon in the second area. There's like that's for the first time you see Budu and Roselia.
Well, that's like poison. Lots of poison.
And I think somebody at Game Freak They've been working on the games for a long time. Bless their souls. Hopefully they get a great retirement plan. But whoever is obsessed with Zubat and Geodude, please retire them. Like, get them off the
Cricketot. Cricketot. There is no need for Cricketots all over the place.
But I think a new contender has happened. They were like, you know what? Paris needs the spotlight. He's on every map. And he's very aggressive. And
there is too much Paris in this game.
And I can't handle it anymore.
It's the new Geodude.
Like, look. As somebody who's working at the Pokemon Company or Game Freak, we know you listen to the show. If you're going to keep giving us Zubats and Geodudes and Parises, at least give us Galarian forms of them. At least let us, like, Hisuian forms. Galarian, let us look at something new.
Well, I mean, we did get a lowland Geodude.
Well,
so
put him on the island then. Yeah. Like, get rid of the old. Give us the lowland Geodude. Give us something different here. Ending point here is the first area is so great and so rich and such an amazing experience. And the second area, a little muddy, a little brown. The Paris everywhere. The third area, a little bit better in Pokemon choices. The fourth area, we ran out of Pokemon because we're giving you the same ones again. And I think that's where a bigger Dex would have fixed this.
I disagree with that about the fourth area.
The fourth area is Shinx galore. And I've been seeing Shinx for three areas plus.
I don't want to talk about why I disagree with that because it's a big spoiler for that area.
Oh.
There is a lot of Shinx, though, when you walk into the area.
There is a lot of Shinx when you start. But what the fourth area does is interesting.
Yeah.
And I don't want to spoil why I think it's a better design than you're giving it credit
But
for.
If the Pokedex was bigger, we would not
it's,
be having...
Yeah, if the Pokedex was bigger, we would still have Bidoofs everywhere. So let's...
True.
Let's
True.
Not say
we
that
know
they are good
the
at...
Way, the
that,
mind of the game.
Yeah.
It's also, it's like slightly weird, like Murkrow comes out at night on the second area and like not really anywhere else. And it's like, why do you keep giving me... Like, there's other night Pokemon. Like, why is it not Paris during the day, Spinarak at night or something? It's... I don't know. It's... There's some other slightly weird choices.
A bigger Pokedex would have helped some.
Yes.
I don't think knowing that when we had what? How many did we have in Sun and Moon, potentially?
320, I think, for the first Pokedex. 400 for Ultra.
You still had giant swaths of Zubats and stuff.
Oh, yes.
Like,
you don't have to run mine.
Like, you still have a million... Like, A bigger Pokedex does not alter the fact that they really like not having great biodiversity.
Tentacools and Tentacruels.
I think bigger Pokedex in the sense of this game breaks down into five areas. And there are no routes, there are no cities. And sure, there can be some overlap. Obviously, there's only so much you can do with water, so much you can do at night, so much you can do with caves. But if instead of having... Gosh, how many routes are in Brilliant Diamond, Shining Pearl? Like
100.
But having each area with a more unique selection of Pokemon, so by the time you get to the fourth or fifth area, you're just like... Because you are, at least for me, I'm like excited to go to a new area because I'm excited to see new Pokemon. And when you first walk into Area 4 and all you're seeing are Shinx and Mothums, you're like, well, this isn't exciting.
Yeah.
And yes, Area 4 has some great Pokemon in the back, but...
It opens weak. I'll agree with that. Also, don't do what I did, which is ignore the mission to set up the second camp in the swamp area until you play the game.
Oh, no. I did that immediately.
Yes.
I forgot. I didn't even notice it on the map, and it wasn't until today that I'm like...
That is such an easy mission, too, because it's like, throw a Pokeball, throw a Pokeball, throw a Pokeball. Done!
Yeah, I didn't even see it on the map. It wasn't until today that I got the second camp in the swamp area. So I just spaced it.
I think we should wrap up here. Another great part here, mass release, that's a thing. I'm not 100% sure how to unlock it. I know the box system. As long as the boxes keep filling, more boxes will start opening. That's just like in other Pokemon games.
Yeah.
The game will actually straight up tell you if your boxes are full. I believe it's 29 boxes, 30 Pokemon per box. I believe that's 890 Pokemon. I filled my boxes very quickly because I catch a lot. The game will not let you catch anymore. And then in the bottom corner, I think it's the right-hand corner, it will say your pasture is full, and it will keep blinking that at you.
Yeah.
So that's a great feature. There is no way to search for alphas or shinies, so I would highly recommend people to use the marks in a way. Like, there are no IVs in this game. I know some people are still on boomer mode for using the marking system for IVs. There are no IVs in this game. Mark your shinies as like stars, and that way you can just search by star, find all your shinies, and put them in a box. You can also, I just mark my alphas as the red circle because I don't know, red eyes, so you can find all your alphas very quickly so you don't accidentally release them. They did do two great things as well. One, the shininess appears in the name of the Pokemon. That's incredible for accessibility. Pokemon games, and I think just Nintendo games in general, are so bad at accessibility, so this is a great step for people who are colorblind, or people who maybe can't hear the sparkles or whatnot. So that's in the name. The other thing is when you try to release a shiny in a box, it will tell you that it's a special Pokemon. So another great thing to do. I don't mean to do this, but because we brought up boxes, they do the when you catch a new Pokemon, it goes to the front of the box.
Yeah, I hate
and
it.
And it's they did this in Diamond and Pearl. It's the worst.
Yeah.
In Sword and Shield, or most Pokemon games in the past, I think almost all the Pokemon games until we got to Diamond and Pearl, when you caught a Pokemon, it would go into the box that was selected. So if I'm on box 20 and I start catching, those Pokemon go into box 20 and then they fill from 20 to 21 to 22. In this game, if I have a single spot in box 3 and then box 4, 5, and 6 are all filled, whatever I catch will go into that single spot, and it makes it impossible to find stuff if you're not using the search feature at all. So I don't know why this is a thing. I don't know why they decided to change this. It is awful, because if you're trying to build a living dex, don't do it in the first like 5 boxes, because they're just going to fill in the blanks. You have to like move it to like box 5 or whatever.
It's because Google.
Yeah.
It is some 2 steps forward, 1 step backwards.
Yeah. I believe you unlock mass at some point. If you talk to the pasture people, they say, oh, you can now release.
Yeah.
They let you know when you can now release. And it is surprisingly well done.
Yes. And it is great that if you try to mass release and there's a shiny in the bunch, it will yell at you.
Yeah, it will yell at you.
I still think Pokemon Go has the best system for signifying that it's a shiny before you even tap on it, like letting you know it's a shiny, like... Whatever Game Freak is doing, just look at what Pokemon Go is doing, because they figured out how to throw away Pokemon very well in that game.
Yeah, because it's very important to do.
And it's very important to see that it's a... like, the one thing I think would really make it great is you can see it's a shiny in the circle, but again, for people who are colorblind, you have to like hit the start button like twice to like toggle it and stuff, and they put the shinies in the pasture specifically. They put the star on a white background, and the star is like gray. It's kind of hard to see if your eyes aren't great. So it'd be nice if there was a symbol on top of the Pokemon in the pasture, like in Pogo. Their symbol is in the upper right left hand corner, I think. So they're close. They've gotten much better. The like the shiny being in the name is fantastic, and it's great they finally got there.
Yep.
That's all I got. I mean, obviously I can keep going for another hour, but we'll save it for the next episode. Still enjoying the game, though. Still think, if you're still on the fence, like I said, the only reason you probably wouldn't want to pick up this game is if battling is your favorite part of Pokemon.
Yeah,
that's probably the only reason why you might be not pick it up. If you like collecting, if you like exploring, if you like the story of Pokemon, if you like the lore of Pokemon, if you like discoverability, 100% worth it.
Yeah, it is a great game with some minor drawbacks.
Yeah.
It's not a perfect game, but it is well worth the money.
And if you tell me the graphics are good, go to the third area and catch any water type Pokemon and come back to me and tell me the graphics are good, because I can
graphics
count
are fine.
Every single pixel on the Pokeball in that water. It is, I don't know who made that. or who thought that was okay, or why the raft looks like it's ripped out of a Super Nintendo game. But man, this game looks bad at times.
At times.
Well, that lava was not flowing the way lava should flow, I'll tell you that much.
Look, it's fantasy lava. The fact that you can stand next to it at all is a miracle. Do that in Hawaii and see how far you get.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, I've never seen lava in real life, but I'm going to tell you.
I have, and it is terrifying.
Like, but it's not only that, but you have to stand like a kilometer away. Yeah,
like, from where you have to stand, it looks pixelated to be safe. So be happy.
Hey, if you're watching on YouTube, please let us know your thoughts of the game in the comments below. We had a lot of comments last. It was great to hear what people loved about the game. It was great to hear what people didn't like about the game. Do that again. I mean, the game's been out for a week now. Let us know what you liked about it in the comments below. Let us know what you wish was better in the comments below. If you're just listening to the audio version on Spotify or Apple or anything, thank you. We hope you enjoyed the bonus episode. It is a fresh month. It is February 2nd. We're recording this. This should go up February 3rd. So a perfect time to sign up for our Patreon, patreon.com/PKMNCST. We're almost at 500 patrons. I think we ended January with like 490. So you too could be number 500. But we have a lot of rewards over there. Gets you access to
just
our Slack
like the
community.
Upcoming episode.
Gets you ad-free episodes, gets you bonus episodes, all that stuff. Really supports us. So if you want to do that, that would be great. Otherwise, I don't know if the... I think we'll do like our final thoughts / impressions next Thursday. So when this is coming out on Thursday, final impressions, thoughts next Thursday. And then we'll just have a normal episode on like Monday, because we do have Pokemon news we need to cover. Okay. So we can't spend all
I see what you're saying. Okay.
We can't do all of Monday for Legends. We'll do some Legends, obviously. Probably half the show will be Legends, and then half the show will just be like...
garbage.
Did you see those new plushes? Did you hear about that Lunar New Year in Pokemon Go? Did you hear about the Palentine's Day event in Masters? Save your thoughts for Monday.
Oh, man, I'm mad at my poll, right? You brought back bitter memories of my poll today. I'm so mad.
So we will see you all on Monday, and then like the final impressions, thoughts will probably be next Thursday. So two episodes this week, two episodes next week. But thank you for listening. If you want to follow Will on Twitter at WashInTheSink, Greg on Twitter at WhiteWing, I'm on Twitter at DragonLake. We are doing a Switch OLED giveaway. That's on socials. That should be in the podcast show notes. That should be on the pinned comment on YouTube. Completely free to enter. Ends on February 18th, I think. And then a copy of Legends as well. So two giveaways. One, the Gleam is for the OLED. Just retweeting the tweet is for entering to win the copy of Legends. Do whatever you want with the copy. If you already have it, give it to a friend. Give it to your mom. Grandma, I hear, would love this game. So, anyways, this has been another episode of the Pokemon Podcast, and we are
super effective.
Super shiny Alpha Budu. If you have one, give it to me. Make my dreams come true.
This show is supported by Patreon. A shout out to all our producers who support our show at a high level, starting with Steven, Sean, Matthew, Bovine, Kay, Jessica, Jacob, Brian, Evan, Ryan, Nate, Catherine, Casey, Josh, Smash, Gray, Dylan, Carlos, and Alvaro. And a huge shout out to our executive producers of Steph, Spencer, Courtney, and Brady. Thank you so much for your support. If you would like your name read at the end of the show, or you just want to support, it's super effective. You can head over to patreon.com/PKMNCAST or ise.cash in order to support the show if you want to. Otherwise, thanks for listening, and we'll see you guys next week.